What is happening, everybody? Welcome back to Tour Life. You have Brody here with you tonight. We've got Silas behind the keys as always, and Yuli. Silas, what's going on?
Well, as you can see here, Yuli's missing. So he got the time change wrong. You know, it happens to the best of us. You know, I mean, he's been on the East Coast for a while. He's not a West Coaster or a whatever Central Coaster.
Central time.
Yeah. So he's an hour off by everything. So he just called me and he's like, Brad, his caddy, was supposed to be, I guess, picking him up in 30 minutes. And he has all of his stuff, apparently.
Oh.
So.
Oh.
We're going to, I don't know. And also, he doesn't have any Wi-Fi at his Airbnb.
Okay. So it could be a Brody and Silas show tonight, which could be interesting. We could also have, maybe Dark Horse. Aaron, you want a Dark Horse co-host tonight? No, he's got stuff going on. We might have some randos pop in. We'll see, but we'll kind of run through it. I do have a lot to talk about tonight. So tonight we are going to be discussing, obviously, the Waco Annual Charity Open, which will be at two courses for the first time. I think we're all familiar with the Beast, but that will not be the only course anymore. So Yuli just texted me saying, I'm waiting in Germ's car for him to take me somewhere. Stas, if you want to text him to let him know that we are live, and then you can kind of just work with him on what needs to happen, and then just pop on here and let me know. But we will keep rolling here. So we'll be talking about that. We're going to talk a little bit about the Memorial Championship because it brought up a couple storylines that I want to discuss. And then I have some responses to some of comments. I did want to have Yuli on here to talk about the spin control debate, but if he's not on here, we might have to push that back. We've got our wild story of the week, Edwin stats, and then we'll finish it off with some listener questions as well. But before we jump in, shout out to our sponsor of today's video, Manscaped. Top of the morning to you. This episode is brought to you by the St. Patrick's Day Shamrock Shavers Manscaped. Let your confidence shine bright this year with Manscaped Lawnmower 5.0. Embrace the luck of the Irish and join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. Head over to manscaped.com and use code TOURLIFE for 20% off plus free shipping. Ever since I've used Manscaped, I can proudly say I found my pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Meet your new lucky charm for St. Patrick's Day, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. This trimmer comes with two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, one for a classic trim and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Complete your look with Manscaped's signature Beard Hedger Pro Kit, plus Handyman electric face shaver. Whether you're sculpting your beard or cleaning up your neckline, there are always the right tools for the job. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code TOURLIFE at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code TOURLIFE at Manscaped. Silas, we finally did it. We got TOURLIFE in our, does he need my address? Is he coming here?
Yeah. I think that's the plan.
I'm so far away from everything.
Oh no.
Yeah. Okay. Let me send him my address again, but I don't think that's going to be super useful. I'm very far away. He's going to be like, "Oh, that's going to be like 30 minutes from here. The podcast is going to be over by then." All right. Always thanks to our friends at Manscaped. We finally got Tour Life, which is super, super nice. All right, recap of my week. And maybe we'll get a little recap of Silas's week. We don't ever get to hear what Silas was up to this past week. So maybe we get a little recap of your week, Silas, when we're all done here. 5-year anniversary with Kelsey. Crazy how fast it goes. It doesn't feel like 5 years at all. Time flies truly when you're having fun, I guess, but we got to spend most of the week together, which was super nice. We went out to one of our favorite restaurants in Dallas and had a lovely evening and spent a lot of time with our corgis, which, as you guys know, we absolutely love them a lot. We went to the trail, which I don't think we've actually ever taken them to the trail. We normally run the trail, but it was super nice taking them out on a walk. I think they weren't used to it because a couple of them were kind of limping a couple hours later, so they might have gotten a little too sore. But it was very, very, very pleasant. We had some great weather in Dallas, so it was very nice to kind of have a week back in Dallas before I came down here to Austin. We also did a lot of housework, so we kind of did away with some of the features outside and put some new stuff in. So it's just doing some chores and whatnot. Also, some cool stuff that's happening this week with Discraft is our It's Always a Passion. That is dropping tomorrow night. So if you're listening to this live right now, that will be Wednesday night. It will be dropping. We're doing a crystal run. So we've done, I'm trying to think, we've done a Jawbreaker Z. And then we also did, I think we might have just did a Z one, I want to say. But this is a crystal. And if you want to see how it flies, me and Ezra throw it a couple times in the video that we dropped on our practice round today. It's stable. It is, I mean, it's not like a Raptor, but it certainly is a very stable run of passions. Probably one of the most stable run of passions I've ever seen. And it was awesome. It was very, very cool, very nice, and it will definitely be added to the bag. We also have light discs dropping Friday. So I think Ezra's got the Nuke. I have the Thrasher. I don't honestly... What did Aaron get? Did he get the Nuke OS or the Raptor? He got what? He got the Machete. That's right. So if you like lighter discs and you want to maybe, the easiest way of saying it is if you want to throw shots with discs that you see the pros throw, you're going to be more likely to do that with these discs than with actual normal weight discs. So check those out. Those drop on Friday. And also, Silas, if you want to pull this photo up, I pulled my second biggest card ever last night. We posted the video over on Instagram. This is a Victor Wembanyama out of 149 pink. This card is roughly around $500 to $550 raw. If I get it graded and it comes back gem, it could very well be close to a $2,000 card. I pulled it out of a $30 box that I bought in Waco here at Target. So that was fun. It was cool because I literally asked Ezra, I was like, hey, should I open a box right now? He's like, yeah, yeah, whatever. Opened it right in front of him. I was freaking out. Tristan actually was just showing up and heard me freaking out in the parking lot. And Ezra kind of looked at me like, dude, what? It's just a car. Like, you know, what's going on? And I explained to him, no, this is like a very rare card of potentially one of the best basketball, like, right now, people are saying he could potentially be one of the best basketball players, go down as one of the best basketball players ever. So pulling that was very, very cool. But Silas, what were you up to this past week?
You know, it's been weird. It's been different having Trevor gone. So It's been me, Connor, and Hunter at the office every day. So that's been a little bit different, a little more chaotic, but also a little less chaotic because Trevor and Hunter tend to get in these weird arguments about random things like ratings and this other mumbo jumbo. So there was none of that at the office, or not as much of it at least. So a little bit different, but good week overall. I mean, we're still pumping out so much content on the Foundation YouTube channel, the podcast channel, all that stuff. It's been great. We got some little teaser for everybody who watches the show. We got some Tour Life Discraft custom Tour Life. I don't know when it's hitting the site or anything, but keep your eyes peeled because that's coming soon.
T- Tony Dombovi, thank you for becoming a Tour Life crew member. Let's go. We also had another Tour Life member, Disc Golf Saves Lives. So two new Tour Life members tonight. Very cool, very cool. Yeah, I did get a photo from All Business Brad with those Tour Life. I have to tell you that one of them is like an absolute 10 out of 10. The other two I like a lot, but one of them is like, holy crap, I can't wait to actually get that disc in my hand. So very cool. Those will be going up on foundationdisc.com at some point. All right, I do want to address some of the responses that I got. I didn't even know we were really going to talk about that. Normally I have show notes and we go through. Oh, he said I was already a member but had to get a new debit card. So it's funny it says I'm new. Oh, interesting. Okay. Because, oh, it charged you with a different number. Okay. So before the show starts, I normally spend, you know, a couple hours writing all the show notes of all the stuff I want to talk about, all the stuff that's interesting to me. And last episode, we definitely did not have on there Brody says what he feels about disc golf and how he's going and all that stuff. That was definitely not on the list at all, but it just kind of organically happened. Me and Yuli kind of were just talking about the tournament and it kind of organically happened. And then we kind of had that real moment of me and him just kind of talking back and forth like we almost would do in person. And that's one thing I do love about this show is we try to keep it a little professional in a way, but really it's just the same conversations that you would see me and Yuli have on the couch, or if we have, you know, AB or whoever we have on, Simon, Calvin, whoever we have on. That's pretty much you're seeing the conversations that we have on tour. Like, we're not really dressing it up. And if you guys know and listen to the show, you know that we don't really shy away from any sort of, you know, how we feel, what we should say, what we shouldn't say. So that was just kind of a real open thing. I didn't really know what was going to come of it. There were a lot of comments and I appreciate everyone that reached out. I do appreciate it. I'm not depressed. I am very happy with where my life is right now. It's just this one part of it I'm having issues with, and that's what I kind of opened up with. But I think some people definitely misunderstood, or maybe they didn't listen to the whole thing and they just, you know, heard, because there were some other videos and stuff that talked about it, and I don't even know what they said, but I'm sure they weren't like, they didn't play the full 20 minutes of me and Yuli's conversation. So there was maybe some misunderstanding going on, and I kind of want to just try my best to clear that. And if Silas, if I say anything that you're like, hey, that makes no sense, definitely call me out on it, because I'm going to try to do my best. I'm going to try to do my best to explain myself. So these were some of the comments that I saw that I was like, ooh, I don't know if you really got what I was going after. So the first one says, it's hard to imagine calling professional disc golf boring. Do you realize the average dude would swap lives with you in a heartbeat? Way to be humble, bro. So to this, I would comment, there are tons of jobs out there that to certain people, they might think is awesome and amazing, and they would love to do it. And there are a bunch of jobs out there that you wouldn't think that's the case, right? And the easiest thing would be like for me, skating. Like, I don't really like ice skating all that much. So I'm sure there's tons of people out there that think being a professional hockey player would be awesome and they would love to do it. I have no desire. I have no passion in doing that. I don't like ice skating. I'm not a fan of it. So it's also freezing cold. If you've ever been in an ice rink, and you know me, I don't like the cold. So this idea of saying, calling something boring, like everyone has different feelings towards different hobbies, different jobs, and all that stuff. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to come out and just say, oh, I'm bumping the desk. Okay, I got a shaky cam. I'm on a very small desk, so I apologize. I normally like talking with my hands. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to say that a hobby of yours or something that you really enjoyed at some point in time, you fell out of it. Or for whatever reason, you're going through a weird part of where it's not as enjoyable as it used to be. So hopefully I explained that well. The next one, this is why I never liked, supported, or was positive about Brody. When you have everything, money, wife, all the things he has, you take grinding and working hard for granted. First thing I would say, have all the stuff I have is because I worked hard. So I don't really understand. I wasn't a, what do we call those people? Silas, trust fund baby. Is that what it is?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Wasn't a trust fund baby, grew up single mom. She was a teacher. Definitely was not handed things, money and opportunities like that in life. I worked very hard. And I think, I think a lot of people don't know my whole backstory. They just know disc golf Brody, which is completely fine. And so I don't think they realize like the amount of work and effort I put into building a YouTube channel, making videos, doing all that from the get-go, and also my ultimate Frisbee career, how much time, effort I put into that. And so I can see how some people are just like, they just see the disc golf side and they actually don't see the full picture. Oh, Yuli's in the house. Dude, you're so close. I thought it was going to take you forever to get here. All right, how do you want to do this? You might not even need AirPods. You might just be able to go speaker, but you're going to have to probably go in a different room. Take your time though, because I'm just kind of responding to comments personally for me. So it's actually a perfect time. And then we'll have you. Oh, sweet. We're going to have the spin debate. Yes. Yuli's here. We can have the spin debate. Okay. So, but it shows the commitment of Brody, and this was a cash grab in my opinion. Again, the cash grab thing, I was making 3 to 4 times the amount of money I'm making now before coming into disc golf. So I don't know how that's considered a cash grab. I've always followed. And again, this is, you know, for people that have followed me for my entire career online, they know that I've always followed stuff that I really like and stuff that I really love to produce, love to make. If you've ever heard of Good Good Golf, before there was Good Good, there was Bro 5. That was a very successful group. And if you know who Good Good is, you know how successful they are. I could have easily continued to go that route, but I didn't like how things were going and I split from it. So the idea of me getting into disc golf and, you know, creating a podcast like this and doing all these things, it is what it is. Jack says, I hate that you're giving these responses for immature people. They are subpar people giving responses for clicks. They aren't thought out and have zero. Well, I think there's a lot of people that there was actually a lot of people that were thinking this way. So I thought it was warranted for me to respond to at least some of these people. 79% of millionaires did not inherit the money, but a lot of people assume they all did. Interesting. Wait till you get a real job and you will beg to play disc golf. And by the way, 36 is not old. I would agree to disagree. I think 36 feels a lot older than when I was in my 20s. I will say that. And the wait till you get a real job, I actually was a teacher for a decent amount of time. I also was a camp counselor. I also worked 40 plus hours as a sandwich artist at Subway. And then worked my way up to being a manager at that Subway. I've had real jobs before in my past. You all good? Oh, Yuli's getting set up. I love it. I've had real jobs before in my past. And a lot of those jobs I really, really liked. I love those. Yeah, math teacher. I love those jobs a lot. And so my hardest job, I would say, was a golf course maintenance worker, I guess you could say. And that was tough because I had to wake up at like 4 o'clock in the morning. And it was like a full lifestyle change of having to go to bed super early to wake up at 4 to start doing manual labor for, you know, 8+ hours a day. Brody's a sandwich artist. Yes, Shay, I'm nasty behind the sandwich. I can make you a nasty, nasty BMT very quickly. I'm going to be honest, Brody, you've barely been in this sport and you've never finished that high. I think you're a sore loser. And I say that with all due respect. You want to always win or be near the top, but you can't accept defeat. That's my honest opinion. I feel like, Okay, so I think this is a little bit off base because it's trying to go off of performance solely. And I try to do a good job of explaining leading into this year, I didn't have the desire, the passion that I had in previous years to go practice and grind and do all that. So before there was any sort of performance, before I went out and played in Florida, leading into it, it was a completely different. And that's what I was trying to get at, is it wasn't just because I almost finished in dead last at the tournament. Like, I didn't want to go and play at that tournament. I didn't want to, before I even got there, I didn't want to. Where in years past, the season would end and I'd be very eager to start learning, practicing, you know, getting better at my craft in the off season. For some reason this year, that just wasn't the case. Very few people are in your situation where they can whine to their boss for 20 minutes how they don't care about their job anymore. He admits that he practiced for his job less than 8 hours during the off season and certainly showed in the results. In a similar situation, 99% of people would be fired. Okay, so this is a perfect example too. Like, I don't view disc golf, and I don't want to view disc golf as a job, because I don't necessarily have to do it, right? And I try to make that a point, is like, everything that I'm doing right now in my life is because I want to do it. This podcast, I don't need to do this podcast, but I love doing this podcast every week. I love being on here, talking to our Tour Life crew, talking to Yuli about disc golf. I love doing this. I don't need to do this. At one point in my life, I needed to make money. I needed to, you know, find a job to pay the bills, to pay my student loan debt, to do all that. I needed that. I don't need that anymore. So everything I'm doing right now is solely because I want to do it. Also, I don't know if Yuli's technically considered my boss. I think a boss is someone where it's like they tell you basically what to do. But I guess Yuli does that sometimes, I guess. I do that with my boss on the daily. I think a lot of people actually do that with their boss. All right, we got Yuli in here. Sweet, Yuli, I've got two more comments to go through. And I told Silas if I... You sound fantastic. I don't even hear the fan behind you. You always look great, man. No. This Wi-Fi is crisp.
Look at us.
Oh, it's even better. Okay. Well, if it starts, he wants you to go landscape. If it gets choppy, Yuli, just let me know and we can give you the Wi-Fi password. But you're Gucci right now. Yeah, you're Gucci right now. All right. Last two here, and then we'll move on to the spin control debate, which I'm very excited to get in with Yuli on this one. And I told Silas, Yuli, if I say anything and you're like, that makes no sense, just call me out. All right. Brody just needs some tough love. He loved Ultimate because he was a top player and relevant. False. When I first got into Ultimate Frisbee, I was actually really bad. I didn't know what I was doing. It wasn't until my third year in Ultimate Frisbee that I actually was somewhat decent at it. So, that's a little false. He liked ball golf because he was relevant with the social media world, but would never ever make it on tour. Again, false. I loved golf because I started playing golf at a very, very young age. It was probably the first sport that I really fell in love with, but it got to the point of where it was just kind of a little too expensive to kind of make that next step for me and the situation that I was in growing up. But I always loved golf, and I always had something in the back of my head that said, at one point in time in my life, if I get the ability to, I want to see how good I can get at golf. And I had that opportunity and I took it. Let's see here. This one, some people might push back on me on this, but I've talked to Hunter and Trevor, and so they're fine with me saying this. It says, fell in love with the game, support from same company that makes his Frisbee disc, instruction from Macbeth, and had power so he didn't have to overcome distance obstacle. Due to his social media backing, he came in love by fans and pros as the pretense helping grow the game. The problem here is Brody is not a top player, being referred to as a top player. This is where his burnout happens. He will look to playing something else that he can be relevant at. I truly hope he stays with disc golf because the game needs him more than he needs the game. He is good. Again, I don't really know exactly what this guy's point was, but I'm not going anywhere. And I tried to stress that in my last thing, regardless of whether I'm playing on the pro tour 20 events a year, 10 events a year, 5 events a year, I'm always going to be having Foundation Disc Golf. I'm always going to have Atlas. And then me and Yuli, as far as I'm concerned, this podcast isn't going anywhere either. So I'm always going to be in disc golf. It's just the playing side. That's where I'm trying to figure out where does that fit in with everything. Last thing, I think some of the acidity in the comments is from regular folk in this boat as well. Seeing someone with the possibility to earn a living at something that commentators love to do, but can only do in their spare time. Yes, it's true. When you're being paid out there, expectations are no longer for the love of the game, but there are endless folks out there that have jobs simply to pay the bills that never even have the option of both providing for their family and doing it into something they can also find fun. And once you have kids, that flexibility of following some passion, even if it gets you no revenue, evaporates. As far as, okay, he goes on. Okay, so I get a little bit of the pushback, right? I get a little bit of the pushback. I was just trying. Wait, you got my Wimby in there? It's a $550 card, brother. I get a little bit of the pushback from some folk. I understand it. I was just trying to be honest and open with how I was feeling. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a, man, my job sucks. I don't want to go to work. Like, that wasn't what this was about. This was like a serious thing of like, hey, this is something that I had a passion about and something that I love and that has faded. And I'm trying to figure out why or how do I get it back or what I should do. So there's that. I will say I still work a crap ton every day. So it's not like I'm, it's not like I'm not working, even though I don't have to necessarily. I do what I love, and that's the whole idea of this. This is the first time that it felt like I went to a tournament because I felt like I had to go versus wanting to go. So hopefully that answered all the questions. If not, you can post some more down below, and maybe I'll go on and respond to some in the text. But we're gonna move forward from that because Yuli, we didn't get a chance to ask how your week went. But I actually had two fun rounds of disc golf back to back.
Really?
Yeah. Going into Lake Waco, no expectations or anything. Had a great time. Now, was it because we were on a golf cart? That definitely helped. Having a golf cart during these practice rounds definitely helped. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. And today was probably the first day in a really long time that I woke up and I was excited to go play disc golf. So that was good.
Before I get into that, I want to touch base a little bit to some people out there listening to you respond to some of the comments real quick on the way I view that whole thing. Okay. Just really fast. First thing is when I hear The one big disrespectful thing that I hear from a lot of people is people say, talking about other people's games and how they're not relevant and they're not good and they're blah, 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 blah. Here's facts, okay? Last year, Brody made the elite team on Discraft. This is strictly done by a format that Bob and I and Mike created, which is purely performance-based. Purely performance-based, okay? If you haven't checked our team out, our team is nasty. You don't just get on the elite team. You don't just get it handed to you. So, when people are like, oh, you're awful and blah, 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 that's horse crap. It's absolutely horse crap. This guy came into the game, and how long have you been playing?
I started in 2020, so this is what, year four?
Well, you're in 3 years, you was five. What, 1025 rated?
Something, yeah, I don't know.
Something.
We're gonna talk about ratings here in a second.
No. It's a good thing to say because that's what a lot of people categorize good players as. That's a good base, right? He took third at GBO, I believe, which is an Elite Series event. That's a podium finish that a lot of players will never do that are on the tour right now will never do. It just won't ever happen. He did that in 3 years. So when I hear people try to bring people's game backs, it grinds my gears because of how hard I work and how hard it is to do that. You don't know. You're on your computer at home and you have no clue what it takes, what it's like. To get that good that quick is insane. And it's honestly one thing that we've rarely seen in our game. Rarely. It happens from time to time, but it's so rare to see somebody come in 3 years later, be on the Elite team, take top three at an Elite Series. So just to put into perspective, like, that's horse crap. And it's silly and it's disrespectful to other people who have done it. That's my first thing. Second thing, I work so hard. My schedule is insane. There's one person that I know, besides probably Jeff Spring or something, that works harder at different things than me, and that's Brody. Like, that's Brody. He does more stuff than I do, which is crazy to think about because I do a lot of things. And I do it because I love it, so I understand that. That's also disrespectful. Disrespectful to me and the things that I do, to hear people sit talk about somebody who works their butt off. Not because he's my friend, just purely because of I know what it takes to do all the things that he does. When you do all those things, you have burnout. Other people who strictly go and play disc golf and blah, 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 it's probably easier. It probably is. That's not the life that Brody and I chose. We chose to do all these things because I do it because I love it, first of all. But it gets tiring and it's hard. It's hard to go, okay, Monday I have this with my Power Disc Golf Academy. Tuesday I have to practice, do Jomez. Tuesday night I do the podcast. Wednesday morning I get up and I do something else. Thursday, I do another practice day. Thursday night, I do commentary, rinse, repeat every single week over and over while being a husband, soon to be father, friend, brother, son, all those, captain of Discraft. Like, these are things that people don't put into perspective, the amount of time that this guy puts in. So, like, burnout's okay. And if he gets tired, it's okay. And if he needs to take a break, it's okay. And if he needs to leave, it's okay. It's his life. Period. That's all I have to say about it.
All right. Well, I appreciate the kind words. Let's debate now. Let's get into it.
All right.
Spin control. So this was brought up on debate night this past week, and I've been very eager to hear what your thoughts are on. This guy, I'm trying to think. I think his name was Lucas. I think his name was Lucas. Smart kid. I mean, really good on the show. Glad to have him on. But here I disagreed with him completely. He claimed one of the reasons why Olympus at the chess.com Invitational played so well was it required players to have to throw required players to actually have to change the spin they were putting on the disc off the tee. Now, my pushback on this is the only time I think that spin control, if you want to call it that, comes into play is like on upshots when you're not throwing full power shots. I have never heard of anyone throw a shot, a full power shot, and be like, oh, I'm going to take some spin off, or I'm going to add some spin to it. We all want to throw our full power shots with as much spin as possible. That is advantageous. And with spin, usually comes speed. So when you say I'm taking spin off, are you actually taking spin off? Or are you throwing it softer? Because ultimately, yes, it will spin less, but the speed is also less. And my point was, I don't think I've ever seen anyone throw a 72 mile per hour shot off the tee that has 1500 RPMs. And then the next shot go, all right, I'm going to throw 72 miles per hour, 1700 RPMs. I don't think we've seen it. We have a tech disc too. we can actually test this out and see. But the idea that people are like controlling their spin, that really is only ever happening for upshots. And I still don't think people are like, oh, I'm going to try to spin this a whole lot, or I'm going to try to flop this one up there. I think the majority of the time, you're still trying to throw a lot of spin. Thoughts?
You're right about it. I think there's one scenario where I think you can put more spin, and that's in the wind. So, like, me.
What are you doing physically to add more spin to the disc without increasing the speed of the disc?
I think I do increase the spin by lagging more and then follow through at a faster rate at the end. So like a lag pop to spin it more in the wind, like to keep it underneath something or something. I think I am spinning it more.
Do you want to bet $100 and have the tech disc pull it out?
No, it might not be, but that's what I'm thinking, right? That's what I'm thinking. Sure. That's what I'm thinking.
It's a feel thing.
Yeah.
But ultimately,
I don't know the answer to that. But I do know that spin control mostly is dictated by the stability of your disc. Like, I want my disc landing with the least amount of spin as possible almost every single time. That's getting the most rotations out of it, the maximum amount of flight until the very end. And then when it dies, I don't want a lot of spin. Cause if you have a lot of spin, it's going to keep going on the ground and have different sorts of ground play. So like when I'm throwing a full distance shot, like down a tight fairway, I'm taking something hopefully that when it lands, it has thrown the max amount of flight out of the disc that my arm can put on that disc. And then at the end of it, it has less spin, if that makes sense. So like an Annie that comes down and then it's just like dead, boom, lands. That's what I'm trying to do.
The only thing I can somewhat see someone tell me and be like, oh yeah, that makes sense, is if you changed your grip. Now, again, we have tech disc. We can actually test this out. And when I tested it out, to me, again, it felt like when I generated more spin with using like a power grip, right? All my fingers underneath versus a fan grip. My fan grip was still of a slower speed than my power grip. So even though my spin was higher with the power grip, so was my speed. So I think the actual relation, and again, that's why I think it matters, the relation between speed and spin, that needs to change. So it needs to go from, you know, power grip 72 miles per hour, 1500 RPMs, to a fan grip 72 miles per hour, 1300 RPMs. And it's like, oh wow, okay, if you go to a fan grip, it actually will reduce your spin.
Right.
I don't see that happening with the numbers that I have seen myself throwing.
Right. So like when I'm throwing, this only happens on like probably 200 foot shots is the only time that I'll switch my grip. And I only do it with like a Raptor shot. So that's like if I have a 200 foot shot that I have to like flex something and have it come in soft and skip left, I can't power grip it because I'm putting too many rotations on it, I think. And I'm still throwing it hard with a fan grip, but the rotations, it seems like it doesn't have as much because it's coming out.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. We now have technology that actually can show us these numbers. So, you know, again, with how new disc golf is, you're going to have a lot of people on YouTube have those like clickbaity titles, like how to gain 50 feet with this one easy tip, right?
How many rotations do you put on your like full power shots?
I think I'm right around 1400, I want to say.
Okay.
I mean,
that sounds right. That seems like about the average 1400 to like 16 is what I've seen.
Yeah. Like I think Gannon was some of the highest at like 1700. So yeah. All right. Well, let us, the only other thing I was going to say with the spin thing is one of the reasons why I don't think you also see people like adjust it is because it, by that motion that we're doing, we're trying to replicate that motion as much as possible. And adding like an extra thing to generate more spin, but also more speed that also could generate like a, you know, not being accurate. So you're better off just switching the disc, which is what pretty much everyone does, is they just throw the same way, just with a different disc.
I think the only person, the one person that I'd like to test this out on would be Nico, because he has a lot of different grips that he uses and he throws a lot of different speeds with it.
Yeah.
Like he can throw super hard power grip, but he also down tempos really nice and can throw like fan grip fairway shots like better than most people can do. I don't see a lot of people even changing grips anymore. It used to be a thing.
You don't really necessarily have to. And I think we only would see a huge difference in like how people threw if we limited how many discs you have. There's so many discs now that you can throw the same exact way, but just change the disc and it will do the job for you versus us having to manipulate how we throw the disc to make it fly. So, all right, I will get off my rant of the spin and debate. Memorial recap. Memorial went down. You were there, Yuli. You're actually on the top four here. You're on this little graphic here, finishing 40th place, finishing fourth place, getting a nice little $2,200. Not a bad little weekend for Yuli there. But we have Gannon Burr winning, shooting 36 under par, finishing with 7 under final round, taking home $5,500. That's actually not that shabby for a little A tier up there at the Memorial. For those that don't remember, this is Fountain Hills and Vista. Did you guys alternate this year? They kind of change sometimes.
Fountain, Vista.
Okay. I feel like maybe that's how they normally do it, actually, now going back and looking at some of this. Owen Scoggins wins it over on FPO, taking home over $1,000. Aaron Gossage finishing in second, and Anthony Barella finishing in third, shooting 29 under par. The big story here, well, there's two big stories. We'll get to the first one here. We'll get to the second story later. But the first big story here, are ratings back? We haven't really heard about ratings in a really long time. AB decided to go out and shoot 17 under. He made 17 birdies in a row. He actually threw only two shots on every hole. He went OB on hole one and tapped in for his par. So he had a pretty insane round out there. Now, when it comes to insane rounds, if I had to pick a course that you could have an insane round at, it would be Memorial. However, it still is difficult to do. So I'm not downplaying his, you know, he shot 39, which is ridiculous. So I'm not downplaying it by any means, but you know, we saw this and we saw the post flooding out that this was one of the higher rated rounds of all time. I think it was, would it end up being 11-13? Is that what it was? 11-13. Yeah. And I just wanted to kind of like show a couple reasons. I think the PDGA tries to insert ratings as much as they can when they see fit, but I actually think this was actually bad for them. I think it opened the eyes to at least some people that were talking about it. There were 42 players this past week that shot over par at the Memorial. 42. 18, and just a reminder, Gannon shot 36 under. The winner shot 36 under. You had 42 players shooting over par. 18 of those players shot double digits over par. AB shot 17 under. It rated at 1,113. He beat the field by 3 strokes that round. Now, let's go to a tournament I would say that's on tour that's a similar comp in like the scoring. And I would go like with a Jonesboro. You know, when you go to Jonesboro, you're going to have to shoot double digits all 3 rounds to have a chance to win. Everyone knows that. So Jonesboro, 13 players shot over par. 0 players shot double digits over par. So obviously way less people. The fields were about the same size. So I'm just comparing these two tournaments, these two fields. James Conrad shot 17 under at that tournament. During this round, it rated 1102. So it rated over a stroke easier than shooting 17 under at Memorial. If you've played Fountain Hills and you've played Jonesboro, you know that Jonesboro is way harder to shoot 17 under the Memorial. And here on tour, this rated a full one and a half probably strokes easier than Memorial. So to me, this is another case to kind of show ratings aren't great. They're not good. And I wish we had a better metric. I wish we had something better.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of ratings. Never have been. One of the reasons is like Fountain Hills and Vista produce more 1100 rated rounds than any other course.
Mm-hmm.
Every year there's an 1100. It seems like there. That'll tell you something. It's not the hardest course, but it is a course where you can throw out of bounds or birdie the hole pretty dang easily.
Yep.
And I feel like that's probably why it rates so high.
Well, it's also the level of players. It's no longer on tour either. So you have a lot of lower players going and making the course look harder because they're throwing a lot of OB shots.
Yeah.
Because like you said, there are Fountain Hills, especially, there are a lot of holes that you can go OB.
Yeah.
And so it just, that to me is where it like elevates it to where if you're playing good at Jonesboro and you're playing good at Memorial, you're always going to rate higher at Memorial because the people that play bad at Jonesboro aren't going to shoot 30 over par. Sure. The people that play bad at Memorial, they're going to shoot 30 over par and make it seem like the course is a lot harder than it actually is.
I've shot 1100 at Fountain before. It's one of my two.
Let's go. All right. Disc Golf Pro Tour released some world rankings this year for the first time this year. We'll pull it up. We'll go through it. Yuli, let me know if anything jumps out at you. We've got Calvin Heimberg, number one, Eagle, number two, Ricky at three, Isaac at four, Gannon Burr at five, Paul McBeth at six, Simon Lazat at seven, Matt Oram at eight, Kyle Klein at nine, and Chris Dickerson at 10.
Give me a second to calculate.
Where is Anthony Barella?
That's a good point.
That's my only question. Now, these are...
Who's he going to replace?
These go back 2 years. So that might be one thing that's kind of holding him back is his results from 2 years ago might not stand up as much as these guys. So that would be difficult for him, but I can see how some people are like, well, what the heck? He just won. He like pretty much finished well at a lot of tournaments last year. I think you'll start seeing him creep up the leaderboard if he continues to play well.
But yeah, I would replace Anthony with on that. I would replace him with probably Chris for sure.
Yeah.
That's the only one that really stands out.
Yeah, Nate. That's the only one. I think we'll see a decline. I mean, I could see Paul McBeth also falling out of the top 10 because unless he starts playing well and starts having higher finishes, his good finishes from 2 years ago, those are dropping. So we could see a decent kind of, I mean, I think a Cole Radalin could sneak into this top 10 if he starts playing well. There's a couple guys that can kind of start pushing their way into this. So it'll be interesting to look, but I will give, I'll tip the cap to the PDGA because on Grip Locked, they talked about how the PDGA reached out or worked with people that have done the official world rankings for golf. And that was kind of how they created this algorithm for here. So, I like that they didn't just come up with their own algorithm. They look to someone that has a similar format, tournament style, and we're going off of that. FPO, we'll run through this real quick. Kristen Tatar, number one. Own, number two. Evelina jumps up three spots to number three. Hannah jumps up three spots to number four. Then we have Missy Gannon, Holland. Paige drops down four spots. Haley drops down four spots. Ella Hansen at nine and Katrina Allen at 10. I think we could also see some fresh faces jumping up into the top 10 there.
Yep.
All right, let's jump into our wild story of the week. A few weeks ago, I was visiting family in Arizona. I had a free Saturday morning, so I went and played in a random draw dubs at Spinners. Just so happened to be playing the XL layout since it was the week before Memorial. On the first hole, my partner asked what my rating is, and I say 850, and you could see he wasn't very happy. I then proceeded to park hole one XL layout under the triple mando, and he was suddenly in a better mood. Throughout the first 4 to 5 holes, he was in a good mood and was telling me the game needs a lot more integrity and sportsmanship. Then once we got to holes 6 through 12, he and I both struggled and he flipped his personality. By hole 10, I was significantly closer and he picked up my disc and tossed it and said, "We are taking this." Then a hole later, he had missed the Mando with his shot. I was center fairway. I asked if he hit the Mando and he said yes and just threw from his shot. By hole 15, we had both thrown OB and he said, "Well, best of luck," and proceeded to leave me without a partner. The rest of the card told me he can get like that and not to take it personally. Definitely was my most odd encounter at any sort of doubles experience. Wow. I don't think I've ever done random draw dubs. Have you done that before?
Never done random draw dubs. I've probably played 5,000 rounds of random draw dubs.
Have you ever had like some weird, interesting partners?
Every time you ever play random draw dubs.
Maybe that's why I haven't done it. I don't want to put myself
in that position. It's random, man. You get whoever you get.
Oh, I don't know what I would do if my partner just like was like, "Yeah, man, we're done," and just leaves. That's kind of crazy. All right. Well, if you guys have a wild story, send your wild stories into our intern, David, wildstorytour@gmail.com. That is wildstorytour@gmail.com. And we might just read yours here on the next one. All right. A few things left. Edwin Stats. This is a really interesting one. And I actually showed this to the Goose Man before he left, because I think he just went to go get some food or something. But Edwin Stats broke down how much is putting holding back two top pros. So we've talked about it a lot. Aaron Gossage, Evelyn Nissalinen, but he went and looked really how much is actually holding them back. So what would the 2023 season look like if Aaron Gossage and Evelyn Nissalinen, if their circle one X and their circle two putting were set to the average of the top 10 finishers for each event? So if Gooseman puts the average of the top 10 finishers, he would have ended up winning twice last year. He would have beat Emerson Keith at the OTB Open, and he would have beat Adam at the Portland Open by 4 strokes. He would have dominated that tournament. He also would have doubled his podiums. He would have gone from 3 podiums to 6 podiums. And he also would have decreased his average position from 20th to 9th. Wow. So looking at it, there was a couple tournaments like Idlewild jumped out at me. I asked him too, like, "How did you play at Idlewild?" He's like, "I didn't putt well at all." He would have gone from 14th, Yuli, to 4th at Idlewild if he would have putted average top 10. And then DDO was the other one that jumped out. He would have gone from 12th to 2nd at DDO. So, you know, that is definitely a part of his game that he knows he struggles with, and it's definitely something that he's working on. Evelina, I'm surprised by this, Yuli. I'm surprised by this. Evelina would have won twice last year. She would have beat Krista Tatar at a major USW DGC, and her average finish for the year would have been 3.4. So she would have gone 12 to 3.4, huge jump. She would have had, instead of 1 podium, she would have had 8 podiums. But I'm surprised. Looking at these, Krista Tatar beats her a lot still. Like Waco, Krista Tatar beats her by 4. Worlds, Krista Tatar beats her by 8. PCS Open, Kristen beats her by 2. Open at Austin, or Music City beats her by 2. Champions Cup beats her by 10. Like in my mind, I always thought like if Evelina just got okay at putting, she was going to win so much. But this is kind of showing you just how much better Kristen Tatar is than everyone right now in the FPL.
Yeah, one thing you need to put into perspective as well is your competitors know. Your competitors know how good you are at putting.
Mm-hmm.
And down the stretch of tournaments, it's scary going against somebody who just makes it every single time. And if you're one of those people, that's scary to that person. Like, you're like, okay, like they're not going to miss, so I have to just birdie out. Because if they get any, like Ricky, if he gets anywhere near the circle, like you can just count it as in. That's a scary thing. Tatar, if she's anywhere near, you know she's not just going to give up 20 mm-hmm. footers. And to the competitor, to the person who doesn't putt well, they know that, and it gives them more confidence. So there's also a play on positioning and the way that the tournament actually unfolds over time with that perspective, I think. And that's something you can't calculate.
Yeah. Other story. So this is probably one of the funnier memes I've seen in a while. This was from our intern David, posted Terry Miller had to edit Cupcake's putting routine since his average time frame was 45 seconds. And it's got like the SpongeBob meme one eternity later. Did you end up playing with Cupcake this past week?
I did one of the rounds, yes.
What are your thoughts?
He's got to speed it up. I mean, we got to a hole and I ended up telling him, I'm like, hey, if you take too long, we're going to call you on it. And that's what it got to. He was taking a long time.
Yeah.
I don't think people understand how that can be such a problem in your mind. I think it's similar to like having the yips to people are like, just go faster. And it's like, when you have the yips, there's nothing you can do. Like, you're just going to miss it. You know what I mean? Like, you could be 5 feet and it's just, your mind won't let you make the putt. There's a disconnect between the hand and the brain. And in sports, this happens to where, you know, you see it actually in golf a lot as well. Somebody can be standing over their ball for a long time. I think Sergio Garcia had this problem for a long time to where he would just regrip.
And Hunter Mahan, Keegan Bradley. Yep. There's a lot of people in golf that just have like a very long routine because they just don't know how to pull the trigger.
Yeah. Pulling the trigger is for some reason in those situations. I've never had that problem. I've had the yips before. I've never had the problem of being like, oh, I can't go.
Mm. And it's a serious issue though, because it slows the pace of play by a considerable amount.
Oh, for sure. It's a huge issue. So, you also don't want to see somebody have the yips. No. That also slows it down.
But he's had this issue for a long, long time. Yeah. To where it's like he's had enough time to either figure it out I think this is like, because Aaron, I think, did some commentary for that on Terry Miller's YouTube channel. And I think he was mentioning how like he felt like he should have called it. Like he should have said, he was like, I should have called it more. I think this is a cry out to everyone. If you're playing with someone that is playing slow, it's not just hurting you and your card. It's also hurting the entire tournament. It's hurting the spectators. There was multiple spectators that I saw in the comments of posts being like, it's hurting the coverage, hurting the spectators. It's hurting the whole field. It's hurting everyone. So you have to start calling these players out because there's nothing else that we can do. Like, that's the only thing we can do.
Yep.
So
I mean, I felt bad because I called him out and then he ended up four putting the next hole.
Yeah. I mean, it's brutal.
It's a tough thing to have to do, but you're right. You do have to do it. And I think, like I asked Gannon, I said, hey man, can you go talk to him? Because it's something that you've kind of gotten over. Gannon still takes a long time, but it's nowhere near what it used to
be. Not what it used to be. Yeah.
And I think he could probably give him some good advice of how he got over it. You know, it's got to get to the point where you're like, okay, one pump, two pump, and I always putt it three pumps.
Yep.
You know, and it's going to be weird at first and you're probably going to struggle, but maybe go to some smaller tournaments and do it or something. But yeah, it's got to change. And people have to start calling people on it. That is 100% true.
Yep. All right. Listener questions here. We got some listener questions. Jeremy wants to know, I was playing in a localish tournament where clubs from around the region play each other in a match play for best shot doubles singles. Now it was a non-sanctioned event, but the format was expected to play as such. When it came to the singles, I was matched against an MA1 player whose rating was roughly 130 higher than mine. I knew from his team reaction when the matchup was announced that I was in for a hard round. The front nine was possibly the best I have ever played, getting 7 birdies, 2 pars, finding myself 2 up. My opponent was clearly frustrated, at which point I saw him calling someone on the phone while we waited on the back on the 10th hole. He started insinuating I was cheating and moving my disc, but I tried to not let that break my focus. By hole 12, his girlfriend showed up to watch him play. She started accidentally making noises while teeing off, and she would follow me to the other side of the hole where my shots land to make sure I wasn't moving my disc. By the 16th hole, my focus was gone. I was rattled and ended up losing on the 17th. Have you ever dealt with someone like this? And what would you do? Oh, what would you be your course of action? There's like some Happy Gilmore where he gets those guys to be to cause like issues and stuff. Have you ever had stuff like this where someone's like trying to play that mental game to get you out of your focus?
Oh yeah.
Well, how do you combat that? What should have this guy done?
I mean, it's probably tough as an amateur, but I feel like you just have to compartmentalize it and just focus on your own game and just be like, all right, I'm going to get the next seven. Follow me. I don't know. I'm a game. Like I play a little gamesmanship sometimes too. So I would probably
You like the pushing back.
Yeah. So I would probably be like, hey, you want to come mark my disc for me or something?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That's a good way of doing it. Like addressing it in a funny manner.
Exactly. Like just like, all right, whatever. Type thing, but it takes time. You know, if that happened to me as an amateur, it'd probably be a lot stranger. I don't think it ever did. So,
yeah, I would pull the, do you want me to call your mom to have her come out and watch too? That might be a good line.
By the end of it, you guys might be going a blow for blow though.
Yeah. So Oh man. All right. This is from O-Town Buddy. During round two of chess.com invitational, King Climo said that the distance to the pin was 420. Philo then said that was every disc golfer's favorite number. What is so significant about 420? I don't know if this is like a legitimate question or a joke. This guy might not know. So let's just 420 is, I actually don't know the origin of it, but from what I've gathered, 420 is the time of day when you go smoke weed. I don't know why. Maybe someone in the comments can explain to me why it was 420, but a lot of disc golfers like smoking weed. And I think that was Philo's way of making fun of that. Hopefully that answered it for you. David, should lower paid tour players consider basically selling off the opportunity to caddy for them? Let's just say I pay a player $100 a day to be their caddy. I'm paying $50 to get a VIP ticket anyway, so I'm sure someone would pay a player to caddy. I'm aware of the negatives, but seems like a moneymaker. I get this could really lead to some weird situations, which I'm sure is what's stopping it. But from my perspective as a fan, if I'm going to pay $50 for a VIP ticket, why not just pay $100 and be part of the tournament? I'm assuming caddies don't have to pay to get into the event. If that's the case, I'm really only expending an extra $50 and that money is going directly to the player instead of the tour. Thoughts on that? Should people start like, hey, is anyone a caddy for me? I'll pay you. You can pay me $100. I feel like it's backwards. I feel like the player's supposed to pay the caddy, not the other way. But I could see the problem with this is I think the only people that someone would pay money to caddy for are people that probably don't want to have random caddies. Right? Like if Eagle was like, hey, who wants to caddy for me? It's $100. I think a lot of people would do that. Simon, caddy for me tomorrow, $100. I think a lot of people would do that, but I don't know if those guys necessarily want to play with a random caddy on their bag. That would be my assessment of the situation. And the person that wouldn't mind getting the $100 and to have a random person, I don't know if anyone's paying $100 to caddy for that player.
Right. I mean, that's not something that I would like. I used to get some random caddies from time to time, and sometimes it bit me. Like, by the end of it, they were like telling me how to play their like home course and stuff. And I was just like, oh my gosh, why is this happening? I think eventually everybody should have their own caddy. And I think it possibly could be mandatory at some point to where you can't just be out there by yourself. Hmm. Like you should be have a mandatory caddy, maybe in like 10 years or something. I think
down the road.
Yeah, because if you really think about it, it could help speed up play. It could, yes. It could give somebody to talk to. That way, nobody's like coming over and talking to you all the time. Which is something that I had a big problem with. Is I'm a chatterbox sometimes, especially when I'm playing well. So I'm talking to other players and blah blah blah. But now I have Brad always there to where I can just talk to him and stay in my own world. It's actually one of the things that I think is, I think we talked about this maybe last week or the week before, that's kind of holding some players back, is the fact that they're carrying their own bag. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah, and I think we've seen the tour start doing some things that are money makers for the tour, and maybe money makers for the players indirectly as well. We saw Portland Open. They opened one of the courses for amateurs or spectators or fans to play while we all practice the other course, and that generated more money, or at least that helped pay for the, you know, how much it costs to rent out the golf course out there. And we've also, I just saw it in Florida, there was like a practice round. So kind of similar to like GK Pro skins a little bit, where they go out and film and they kind of sell tickets and stuff. But this was just like a practice round. I don't know if there was cameras, but they allowed spectators to walk the course with this group for a practice round, and they had to pay, and some of the players got a little money for doing it. So I can see certain things like that kind of happening and players being more involved with that. But getting someone random on your bag, I think that's a big step for a lot of people. So I don't see that happen.
Risky business. Right. Risky business. You do that though.
I do it, but also I'm pretty much pulling. I'm pulling from two things. One, I'm pulling from my collector group on Facebook. So there already are people that I feel like have a vested interest in me. And then also I kind of vet the comments, right? So I normally don't pick someone that says, hey, I'll caddy for you, and it has zero likes and it has like no responses. A lot of times it'll have like 38 likes and a bunch of people being like, this guy's awesome. This guy's so great. He taught me how to play disc golf. And so I kind of have the community the disc golf community kind of vets those people. So I'm not like getting a pure rando. And I would say, like, I don't think I've actually ever kicked anyone off the bag. Like, I think year after year, I kind of go back to these places and I have the same people coming back and caddying every year. So it's a lot of fun. All right. Brett wants to know, worst hole at Waco and what would make it better? Yuli?
Pretty easy. I don't know what hole it is. Let me think. One.
Are you talking about the Beast or are you talking about Lake Waco?
Lake Waco. It's like a par three where you crash over the top and it's awful.
Okay. Yeah. It's either hole six or seven. Those are back to back Stahlheiser holes.
It's the one before, it's like left and pass.
So you play a little FBO. Hole four is a very challenging par four. That's like a dogleg left with the water. Hole five is the little spike hyzer up into the basket. And then hole six and seven are both like Stahlheiser shots up and crashing.
Yeah, I'd say that. I mean, they're both not good, but there's one specific one that's just completely guarded on all sides with a beautiful fairway that you fly right over the FPO basket, just absolutely gorgeous. And then it's just going left into like Oblivion. Another green. The green's really nice, but there's no way to access it. Like you have to kind of stall crash it. In there.
It is a challenging shot. What'd you think about Lake Waco? What is your take on it?
Honestly, I
can't. For those that don't know, we're playing two courses a year. We're starting at the Beast, then we go to Lake Waco, which is on a golf course. Then we go back to the Beast, and then we finish. There's a cut after the third round, and then we finish at Lake Waco.
Lake Waco has some really good holes. It really does. Some great holes. I think it has two or three really bad holes. And I think I don't know how it got approved to be on the pro tour with the tee pads that it has. Honestly.
Ooh, you had issues with it. We didn't have any issues.
I don't really, I can modify my run up and I'm fine.
Oh, the drop-offs are scary.
But there's drop-offs on the front and the back. There's no way to run up if you want to get a big, big shot.
On the front are very scary.
I think it's dangerous. I think the drop-off, like, what is it, hole two is extremely dangerous. You can go all the way into a pond if you fall off of there. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure, because I was talking to one of the guys, because I asked him, I'm like, he told us, I made the tee pads. And then he said that they had to do it because the golf course kind of made them.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So they couldn't like level them off. But I just don't understand how you could put your players in harm's way over something like that.
We've talked about this on the pod, and I think it's one of your best takes of where the only spot that every player should feel safe and feel like they can throw their normal throw is on a tee pad. Yeah. We don't need to make tee pads to where, oh, this one's in a weird shape or this one. There are multiple holes where guys are not going to be able to throw their normal way because they follow through and finish one or two steps in front of them. They're not going to be able to do that on these tee pads. They're going to fall off and break something.
Well, there's some really long holes too, where you want to generate some more power. And I get it. Like, I've had this discussion with a lot of people, and I could see it being a part of the game really, to where you had a smaller tee pad just to slow you down. Mm-hmm. Like, I could understand that if that was a part of the game, but it's not.
It shouldn't be.
And it shouldn't be, right?
There should be like, oh, this is a standstill tee pad. Like
thought like making a hole that could play really long is just like have an incline on the tee pad.
Yeah.
That'd be funny. You know, you could make the hole play a little farther.
Yeah.
But that's a discussion for another day.
Sure.
I don't like the fact that the tee pads are like that. And I think it's a huge oversight. A couple of the holes aren't bad. I love the course design, honestly. I think it's great as far as most of the holes play tricky. They play tough. Mm-hmm. The closing stretch, I think, is just fine.
Mm-hmm. I think the players are going to like it, right? Obviously, the guys that like playing in the woods, they're going to be like, why are we doing this? Like, Waco was a course that suits my game because it's more in the woods, right? And they're not going to like it. But the majority of players, it's a good course. It's a solid course. Great design, like you said. I think it's going to get absolutely ripped to shreds on coverage.
Yeah.
It's not on a good golf course. And so it doesn't look good.
Yeah. And I mean, looks like a Texas course to me.
It's not really, it's going to get ripped to shreds just like the Austin course got last year. Even though I thought the Austin course played great, I think this course plays great. I think there's going to be tons of score separation. I think it's going to look bad on coverage and people are going to say, I don't want to see this.
I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see if I'm right. Hopefully I'm not. Hopefully everyone watches it and loves it, but that is what I'm projecting. All right. Last question coming from Noah. At what point do we have the Calvin conversation after Waco, the Texas swing? By no means am I concerned, but if he continues to play mediocre golf, it has to become a conversation at some point. So this is the issue of someone that played so consistent, so well all last season. He has one bad tournament and everyone's like, oh boy, what's going on? That course, we saw a lot of people struggle at that course, right? Now, granted, if you do look at who finished in the top 10, it wasn't like there was really any, the only random name, I guess you could say, was Gavin Rathbun popping up there. A lot of the top players did play well, but we also saw a lot of the top
kids.
Yeah, Joey Buckets. But we also saw a lot of top players not play great out there. So I don't think there's too much concern. Now, if he's coming out of the Texas swing and he still doesn't have like a top 10 after these three events in Texas, then we can maybe start having a little bit of sirens of like what's going on. But I think he's going to do just fine this week.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just a classic case of something to talk about. Everybody says that. I mean, I've been hearing that conversation about Paul for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just keeps racking up wins every year. So, but eventually people do just not play. Like, people like Calvin, when you have career, they're called career years.
Yes.
Like for a reason, he did something that really nobody had done for a long time or very few people had ever done. So I wouldn't be surprised if, I didn't get top 10 every single week. But I don't think we're going to see a Calvin be like, not win this year.
That would be wild.
Not something. And if that happens, then I feel like it's time to have a conversation about it. Yeah. But getting 20th, like the fields are stacked these days, man. Getting a 20th place or a 30th place, last cash, and then the next weekend he could probably win a tournament. That could be. He just did something that was just so crazy. Last year, that consistency was unbelievable, and he could get back to that. But I mean, it was like you said, it's the first tournament of the year. We don't know nothing yet.
I'm not too concerned. Yeah, not too concerned. And it wasn't like a. I'd be a little bit more concerned if it was at like a Fountain Hills. And he didn't play well because that's a very scorable course. Yeah. This course is not scorable. Like that course was very, very difficult. So that's where it's like, I'm not too worried about it. We got our Grippy. Our Grippy came in the mail, our 2023 Grippy award for the longest podcast. We have it. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I don't know if they sent you one too. They might've just
got mine right behind in my studio.
Okay, you got yours too. Perfect. All right, fantastic. So that came in the mail.
Most improved player. Comeback.
You got double. Let's go. Yeah. So if you don't know, the Grippies are the Grip Locked Awards they do every year. Very cool trophy. Is it better than a chessboard? Yeah, I think it is. It's got some weight to it too. It's a real deal. It's a weapon. So that came in. Thanks to all of our new Tour Life crew members. We appreciate all you guys tonight. Tour Life merch update. Silas, what do you got, brother?
All right. We got Grip Locked with 187.
Oh.
187. And we got Tour Life. Tour Life at 222.
Oh, my gosh. 222.
Are we going to get to 300 before they get to 200?
That would be fantastic. Let's get to 300 before they get to 200.
Let's make a push.
Go to foundationdisc.com. We have a lot of stuff on there. Check out all the sweet merch. And let's get to 300 before they get to 200. I love the idea. I love it a lot. What else we got? Apple Podcast or Spotify Podcast reviews. We are now in the 1K. I don't think it's going to update until we get like either, I don't know, maybe it'll say 1.1K, but I think we have to wait now a little bit because we're over 1,000. So appreciate everyone. And look at Silas crushing it with these new graphics. Enjoying the show? Drop a like on the stream. Look at that. That's sick. I love that. Yeah, we have 1,000 people listening tonight. Thank you guys so much. If you would drop a like on the video here on YouTube, that does actually help us out a whole lot. And we appreciate it. I don't have really anything else. This was kind of a low, slow week in disc golf, but we're going to have obviously a lot to talk about next week with the Waco event coming to an end and going into the bye week before back-to-back two big events in Austin and then out in Houston. Silas, Yuli, you guys got anything else?
Nope. Good show.
Yuli, what disc did you have any discs or anything new coming out? We just have a crystal. It's always a passion coming out tomorrow.
I think I have, what is it? A lightweight vulture.
Ooh, I might have to give that a swirl. Yeah. I like that's the idea out of that.
In the next couple of days. So
is that Friday? I think all the light discs come out on Friday. I think it is.
It is, yes, yeah.
I think so. All right, lightweight vulture. That sounds spicy. I like it. All right, well, that's all we got for you guys this week. Thank you guys so much. We'll see you next week.